Hello and welcome to the Odds Checker betting show. This is your Guineas preview. The flat is very much back, but this is our first show really previewing some top class racing on the flat. On your home, I'm delighted to be joined by Andy Holding, who joins us from Punchdown. Andy, must be quite hard to kind of wrap your head around doing a Guineas preview whilst you're going to the racing over there.
Very much so, yeah, George. Yeah, I've had my sort of national hunt hat on all week. Obviously, been keeping in touch with the toings and goings over in the UK with the flat cards. Had a little bit of a look at Ascot yesterday. Thought it was good racing there. But generally speaking, yeah, I've been punches down all the way, really. I actually come back today. I'm ferrying over sort of mid-afternoon, so I should be back for most of the punches down racing on the way back. So I've had to cast my beady eye at Newmarket and quickly come up with a few opinions there. Not quite as in-depth as I probably would be because of not knowing exactly what the ground's going to be, and more importantly, not knowing what the draw's going to be. I think particularly with the Guineas races and the big field handicaps and the sprints we're going to be touching upon in the next half an hour or so. There's a few T's to be crossed and I's to be dotted. So, yeah. You'll have to, like I say, there is a few asterisks next to the horses we're going to be tipping.
Yeah, I think we have to say at this point that normally we would record this for Guineas weekend, possibly on Friday, so we'd have the final decks through for Saturday and Sunday. But because of the way that the cards are falling this week, because Andy's coming back from Punchdown, because I've got a busy day tomorrow, we are recording this at about 9:20 on Thursday morning, which is quite an awkward time to do it because the markets are kind of coming down at the moment because we're about to get final decks through for Saturday. I've screenshotted them live. So these are kind of the odds checker grids as of about 9 a.m. and they are subject to change. We're not going to be able to react to any big news when it comes to non-runners or horses that are taken out of the final stage. But hopefully Sir Andy's insight into the fields as they were beforehand will be insightful, even if the prices do change a bit. So that's the disclaimer ahead of this show. And it also means that some of the races, some of the handicaps that bookend the graded races won't be previewed in as much depth as well, because we don't have any markets. But of course, I'll still ask Andy, who's got the entries before, or the declarations, I should say, to cast his BDI over those. But before we move on to that, Andy, just Punchdown has always been, a race course I want to go to. This meeting in particular is one that's always been on my bucket list, I guess, of sporting travel. Yeah, exactly. How would you recommend it? How's your week been?
I just think, like all the years I have been coming here, you forget how sort of relaxed and laid back it is. It's still intense out on the race course. You know, those grade ones are very much sought after. Willie Mullins, treats this as he would any other big meeting, including Cheltenham. But the actual kind of like surroundings of it, much more feeling of sort of like bonhomie and not so much sort of, intensity and pressure and stuff like that. I feel as a tipster as well, a little bit more loose and carefree about proceedings. It's just because you put everything and all your store into Cheltenham that winners there matter so much. Obviously they matter anywhere and you shouldn't treat a meeting like this lightly, but it just seems to flow a lot easier and I'm a lot more relaxed for this week. I enjoy coming over. I think actually to kind of visit here and come and taste the atmosphere is great. There's great sort of mix of racing throughout the course of the week as well. The smaller man can win. We've seen one or two smaller yards ever have their day in the sun. The racing, like I say, first class, big field handicaps, great grade ones. It's a real kind of like lap of honour for a lot of horses before they set off into the summer. And the local entertainment and hospitality is first class as well. So it's good both on and off the race course.
Yeah, indeed. Maybe we'll go together next year because I would definitely absolutely love to get over there. We could do this Guineas preview in person.
Absolutely.
Let's pop over to Newmarket and have a look at Saturday's card. We're going to kick off with 2000 Guineas Day. We're going to be going through the odds checker grids, so make sure you download the app for the best prices, bookie offers, free bets, place terms, and of course the best tipsters in the game straight through to the app, including Andy's tips, normally the morning, every morning of racing, straight there. The first race that we've got prices for is the Sussex, but we've got a couple of races on the card before that. We've got the listed race that opens up the card over six furlongs, and then the 145 after that, which is the 6 furlong handicap too, where there were prices earlier on, but they've all been taken down for now. Anything to keep an eye on in those two when the markets reform, Andy?
Yeah, the first race, I've always had a healthy regard for Rafe Beckett's filly. Funny story, she had a bit of an up and down season last year. I remember one race, I think it was Goodwood, when she finished third. She basically achieved that feat by running on the slowest part of the track, and she didn't get the clearest of runs. She then went to air and was a little bit disappointed because she was slowly away. But I think we all saw what she could do on a final start. And more importantly, that final start and that victory at listed level came at Newmarket on the rally course when she was really good that day. She pieced it all together. All those kind of like unlucky runs and troublesome passages she had along the way were all erased in one fell swoop. And I think if she runs to that level, then she could be competitive on a seasonal reappearance. She was an eye-catching fourth first time out beyond Quinault on the Rowley Mile first time out. I think it might have actually been this meeting last year, or maybe the meeting after, I think. So we know she goes well for it. The only thing I'd say is a negative is nothing to do with her. It's the yard. Rafe Beckett had a brilliant year last year, but he hasn't quite hit the strap so far this season. I did notice when I was looking at the form and looking perhaps maybe to put a funny story up in my column on Saturday, Rafe's actually 0-21 going into this weekend, which is very much like him. Unlike him. So the horse's chances are there for all to see, being one of the only course and distance winners in the field, and the times that she's been posting are very good. But there is, like I say, a caveat with the stable at this present moment in time.
Yeah, form figures at Newmarket of 141 for Funny Story, but as you say, Andy, maybe a slight caveat there in terms of the yard form. Onto the Suffolk then. We've got Torito is the 5-1 favourite ahead of Metal Merchant and Theory of Everything at 8-1. Dutch Decoy 10-1. Liberty Lane 10-1. Mossa Bashir 10-1. Westerton 12-1. Bo Pedro 14-1. Hafit Alain, King Lear, Lion of War, Majestic, Mr. Professor, all 14-1. 16-1 bar those. Again, we can anticipate the race will cut up a little bit, Andy. But as the market looks at this current moment before final decks, where do you see the value?
I certainly think we've got the right favourite in Torito. I think he's a class horse. He could easily be sort of pattern class this season. He was kind of like on the verge of that last year before I'm not sure what happened to him. He must have got an injury at Ascot when he finished fourth. I think it was in the Hampton Court, wasn't it, behind Wopero. But he was very much upwardly mobile until that point. He's been gelded in the off-season. I mean, the yard's going pretty well, unlike Rafe Beckett in the first season. I think he's had 8 winners in the last fortnight, John and Thady Gosden. And all the vibes are good, and anticipating a good run on his first run for the thick end of a year. He is up against a lot of battle-hardened in-form horses at the moment. Hafit Alain was good here at the last meeting. He went off a big price, Ed Walker's horse, but there was no fluke about his effort. He'd done some good times on the Rowley Mile. He's got a very good record when the ground's on the easy side on the Rowley Mile. So if there's a little bit of rain around, I think he's got to go well. But I'd probably go with Metal Merchant from the informed Jack's Channel stable. Now, just looking at the early sort of time figures that we've been keeping, one of the better races so far was that race that he won, I think it was a fortnight ago. It was the Spring Cup, which is always a very competitive race. There was lots of fancied horses in there. They were a real good, strong gallop. And he come there really tanking at the furlong pole. He caught the eye the way he went into the race. And I like the way he finished off it. Looked very strong at the finish. And that was his first run since being gelded. So there was obviously a good degree of improvement attached to that, to performance off the back of that operation. So if he continues in the right direction, I think he could be dangerous on Saturday. I presume he'll run, because I think David Probert was already jocked up at time of recording. I'll stick with the numbers. I'll stick with an in-form horse who posted a big figure in the shape of Metal Merchant.
Yeah, Metal Merchant 8-1 at this current moment. The pick for Andy for the Jack Channon team there in the Suffolk Stakes. On to the next race on the card, which is the Palace House Stakes, where Mick Barhi is the 130 joint favourite with Twilight Calls. Beautiful Diamond 4-1. Equality 4-1. Curtis is 11-2. Jasur 8-1. Vadrim 8-1. T Spirit 14-1. 7 Questions 16-1. And Significantly 16-1 as well. So still, fifth of 3 runners for each way here in the Palace House. Andy, how do you see this?
Yeah, I was really taken, as probably a lot of form judges and analysis were, with Mick Barhi's run in the Abernan Stakes. I think it was a couple of weeks ago. He slightly missed the break. It wasn't a potentially race-ending manoeuvre coming out of the stalls, because he was still in touch. But I just think it was more the way the races developed at Newmarket which cost him, i.e., it was very much a track bias favour in the front runners. I think Washington Heights, who won the Abernan, was always either in front or in the first two or three. And Mick Barhi was sort of four or five lengths behind at halfway. He did really well to finish as close as he did. But there was a tailwind on those 2 days at the Craven meeting. Hence, the ground was very much favouring front runners. Hence the fact we had so many front running winners. So I upgraded anything that caught the eye from the back of the field. He definitely did. And that was his first run since leaving Roger Varian. So I'd like to think that he'd improve for the run. The yard will know how to ride him accordingly next time. He's got good form here on the Rowley Mile. And I think he's the right favourite. So I think Mick Barhi's the one to beat. I'd just throw in another one as well, George. And that's 7 questions from the George Scott team. I obviously do a little bit of work with George. And he was a bit of a disappointment at Maidan. He was good the first day. He finished third in a hot race, and we thought he's going to have a really, really good winter. But his next two runs, he kind of like regressed a little bit. He ran okay in defeat, but it definitely wasn't as good as his first run behind Star of Mystery in a very fast time. He was going to run in the handicap, but this looked a slightly below par weaker renewal of the Palace House. So we thought we might as well roll the dice in this race. And a strongly run 5 furlongs, which this race will be, because T-Spirit's in there. We all know what he did in that handicap here the other day. This is going to be a lightning quick race, and it'll suit 7 questions. So if he's sort of in the 14, 16 or 1 bracket, I wouldn't totally rule him out. But Mid-Bar, he would be the choice.
Mid Barhi, 130, joint favourite, the selection, and 7 questions is 16-1 at time of recording. On to the big race of the day, the big race of the weekend, that is, of course, the 2000 Guineas. So, City of Troy is 4-6. Rosalian, 4-1. Notable Speech is 10-1. Knight Raider, 16-1. Ghost Rider, 16-1. Alianabi, 20-1. Task Force, 20-1. Iberian, 25s. Insurin, 33s. Henry Longfellow, 33s. Hartem, 33s. 40-1, bar those. Before we get your selection for the race, and I mean, unless it is the favourite, let's just have a quick chat about City of Troy, because, you know, I saw Paul Hayward do a piece this week about how there are always horses that are compared to Frankel at this stage of the season after a good 2-year-old campaign. And maybe it's a bit futile to actually compare, you know, any horse that goes unbeaten in a 2-year-old campaign to the greatest we've seen in most of our lifetimes. Mm. But, you know, ignoring those comparisons, you know, it's often forgotten, I think, that a lot of horses from 2 don't necessarily train on to 3. Where does City of Troy stand in your mind in terms of the exciting prospects to come into this campaign, or at least at this stage of their career? Like, how exciting and how good is he?
Well, it's just been the way that he's finished off his races and he's got to the line. Once he's in full cry, and that's when we can sort of compare the greats over the years, like Frankel. He's a pretty awesome sight to behold. When he won the Dewhurst, I wouldn't say he never looked really in trouble as such, but there was a moment sort of like 2 furlongs out, you're thinking, right, come on then, let's see what you've got. But then once he went into that 4th and 5th gear, he really did open up. He won by 4 lengths going away. The fact that he's managed to do that on the Rowley Mile and over 7 furlongs, he looks for all the world as though an extra furlong is going to suit him even more. So I think potentially we could see fireworks in this race on Saturday. I think that's the one big advantage he has got over the second favourite, his main market rival, Roussillon, who has looked equally impressive in his victories, but he's yet to race here at Newmarket. I mean, I know he's raced on an undulating track to a degree at Ascot, but he hasn't gone down into a dip and then come out the other side. So I think if you are looking to poke holes in Roussillon and find fault in City of Troy, then it's very much advantage City of Troy on that count, because it's all right being able to sort of lengthen and stretch, but when you can lengthen and stretch going down a hill and up the other side in a dip, then you're obviously very well balanced as well as being brilliant. Mm. So he's just about a perfect box ticker. There have been some horses from the Aino Brian stable that have had big reputations and they haven't run here at Newmarket in the past, and I think that's what's caught them out. I think Luxembourg was one of them, maybe Air Force One. Just trying to think of the favourite last day. Augustin Rodin, I don't think he'd run at Newmarket, had he, before before he came here? You'll have to excuse me if that wasn't the case, but off memory, I can't recall them running at Newmarket as a two-year-old. And I think that's what found them out. Whereas this fella... Yeah,
you're right. I was just looking at Augustin Rodin, hadn't. So no. That's correct.
Okay, right, good. So, yeah, you get what I'm saying. I think that City of Troy... He can't really have any excuses unless for some miraculous reason he's not 100%, which I can't believe he won't be.
So 4-6 City of Troy. I mean, the way you're talking about him there, do you think that could be the value, or could you find some each way plays against the favourite?
It's just not my style to either suggest we all lump on that. I mean, he's the most likely winner. I personally probably might not even have a bet in the race, if I'm being honest, George, because I just think for this year, for me, there isn't any absolute standout each way horse. There was last year with Chaldean, because I thought the favourite was vulnerable for reasons I've outlined, and the ground obviously changed on the day, and it very much came into sort of Chaldean category. But as it stands at the moment, I'm not looking at any of these and thinking, oh yeah, this has got a real good chance of beating City of Troy. Roussillon, I think, is one of the only ones that can, but he's got to overcome the track vagaries. He was brilliant when he won in Longchamp, when he won the Lagardère, and obviously he's been very much talked up, similar to City of Troy from Connections. The fact that they won one of the main trials with Hartem, who was a little bit of an unconsidered horse going into it, has got to stand their hopes in good stead. Whether he's quite as good as City of Troy, only time will tell. But it's a fascinating clash between the two. There might be others that might come into it. But like I say, personally, I can't see where they're going to come from. And I've gone up and down, head to tail, and I still can't come up with anything original to say, really, to be honest. So, yeah, I'd expect City of Troy to win. But, yeah, it'll very, very much be a no-bet race for me this time.
No-bet race in the Guineas. But, no picking holes in City of Troy's chances there from Andy at all. And there are four more races on the card, all of them handicaps. None of which we have prices for at the moment. Andy, but any to stick in the notebook before we move on to Sunday?
I'm not sure whether C King runs again in the 4:10, but he clocked a very good time the other day when he won. I think it was at Ripon. And I like the way he got to the line. He looks as though he's really developed as well. I mean, he's always been a fairly sizable individual, but from 4 to 5, he looks as though he's grown another inch. And he looks a horse that Sir Mark could do really well with. I think that was actually Sir Mark's first winner of the campaign, which is always significant. He usually takes a while, doesn't he, Sir Mark, to hit the straps. He's not jocked up, so I don't know whether he's going to run 8 days after win, 7 days after winning. But even if he doesn't run, I think he's one for the viewers very much to keep on the right side of. And then there was another one that was caught the eye the other day at Sandown, also called Chagrin. He ran at Sandown last Friday. On that star-studded card. It was the opening race, the 5 furlong race, and he finished second, but he was very, very unlucky. I thought he was probably the best horse in the race on the day, just didn't get the brakes at the right time. That was over an adequate 5 furlongs, albeit a stiff one. So he clearly goes into the race in good heart, and with any amount of luck in running and a good draw, I could see him going well in the 4:45 as well on Saturday.
Yeah, Chagrin for McAppleby, Tom Markwin booked. Interesting jockey booking there, not necessarily a trainer jockey combo you'd put together, but Chagrin there in the 4:45 one for Andy, then the 4:10 it was for Samart Prescott. Where has he gone? Seeking to take out of there. Moving on then to the Sunday, and starting with the Pretty Polly, we've got Kalpana is the 3-1 favourite. Winter Snowfall is the 5-1 second favourite. Friendly Soul 8-1. Maribella 8-1. Lunar Eclipse 8-1. You Got To Me 10-1. Francophone 12-1. Kittredge 14-1. 16-1. Bar those in the opener on Sunday, Andy.
Yeah, lots of unknown quantities here. Again, a race that I probably wouldn't have a bet in because of that. And I always think sort of fillies at this time of year, very, very difficult to predict. I think the one thing we can say unequivocally is that Kyle Parner doesn't lack for fitness and obviously handling the Riley Mile. I was there the day that she won. There was a little bit of ease in the ground. I mean, it was good, but it was loose on the top. But boy, once she went past the bushes down into the dip, met the rising ground, she was devastatingly good on the eye. Got over that surface fantastically well, looked really well balanced, liked her attitude. She was just absolutely relentless. Once she, you know, got that advantage, she didn't relinquish it and just pounded all at the fractions all the way to the line. Looks an absolute out and out copper bottom stayer. The step up in trip was clearly in her favour. So I think they can probably afford to ride her fairly aggressively again in the belief that maybe one or two of her market rivals might not necessarily be on the money first time out. So it's a really good prize for them to attack on Sunday. And I'm sure Aisha Murphy will go out there and ride her accordingly.
Yeah, so no bet, but positive mention for Carpano.
At this stage, I mean, like I said, it's all subject to flux at the moment. I might have a look at my numbers on the day. I might have a look at what the opposition is. And all of a sudden, they might become a bet if they drift out or they're back up a price. So I'm not going to be putting all these selections in tablets of stone. But right here, right now, Cal Parner is very much the one to beat in my eyes.
Cal Parner 3-1 with Bet365, Ladbrokes and Coral. On to the second race on the card, which is the Dahlia Stakes, where Running Lion is the 2-1 favourite ahead of Silver Lady at 9-2. Carnarvon is 6-1 alongside Stay Alert, Astral Bow 10-1, Heartache Tonight 10-1, Novus 10-1, and Adelaide is 12-1.
Yeah, I think Running Lion is probably the right favourite again here. I'm looking for sort of reasons to sort of take some of these on, but she came to hand, didn't she, first time out last season, which suggests that she's probably a filly to catch maybe in the springtime and into the summer. A form kind of like tailed off a bit. You'd probably be giving her a pass on the last run at Ascot because the ground was soft. And she, you know, having looked at her, she's probably more inclined to be considered as a good ground or good to firm ground filly. She's won here at the track. She beat Sumo Sam at the track here at the meeting last year's season. So you could see why Connections are targeting this race. I actually don't think this is a particularly strong Dahlia Stakes this year. I think Carnarvon's got to be a factor because she was a very good fourth Morged in the Guineas. A season kind of like petered out a little bit and she was on the fringes of the action, but she is a top-class filly in the making, Carnarvon, still. I think maybe similar to the juvenile hurdlers when they go into open company the year after, that's sort of like 3-year-old season can sometimes go missing with some horses, and that was very much the case with her. Silver Lady is another course win as well, and you'd have to respect anything the Godolphin and Charlie Appleby run at this meeting, so she's another one to mention. But I think Running Line is very much the one to beat based on our early season form last season.
Running Line 2-1 best price, that's with Bet365, as short as 11-8. With Paddy Power and Betfair Sportsbook showing you that you should use those checker grids in order to make sure you are getting the best price for your selection. On to the third race on the card, which is the handicap over a mile and 6 furlongs, where New London is the 9-2 favourite ahead of Bagdor at 8-1. In Tinso, also 8-1. Vaguely Royal to 8-1. Adjuvant is 10-1. 12-1 Berkshire Rocco and HMS President. Struth also 12-1. 14-1 Knightswood, 16-1 Barthos. Should reiterate here that we are recording this on Thursday, which means that we are subject to plenty of non-runners in these. And if you did have your bet now, before final decks on Friday morning, then your bet would be settled as a loser if one of them comes out, rather than getting your money back, which would be the case after final declarations. But Andy, how do you see the, you know, it's good for us to have a market in one of these handicaps. How do you see it?
Again, I'd like to see this once the full decks are through.
Post-draw.
I mean, New London has been running pretty well over in Maidan, so he comes here relatively fit. He hasn't run for 72 days, but that run behind Siskani last time out, I think he's a cut above. You know, he's a genuine group horse, isn't he, New London? Always has been. So if you're a class angle punter, then you'd certainly be more than keen to get with him. I think Charlie Johnson, I think off memory, has done quite well in this race in recent times, and he's potentially got a couple here. I think Struth's a horse I've always liked. He ran well in some big field handicaps last season, including Royal Ascot. I think he's a player. And also Knightswood as well. He's not jocked up at the time of recording, but he was second to that aforementioned Sea King in that good race at Ripon. So he's had a run under his belt, and it was in a strongly run race. And he was a very consistent horse last season. So whatever ends up being Charlie Johnson's number one choice or only choice, if he does only run one, I'd be probably leaning towards that way, just ahead of New London on a value perspective.
Interesting. Yeah. All about value. But we'll have to see, as Andy says, given still don't know the draw, and that's so important, especially in these big handicaps. And we'll probably get a glimpse on Saturday as to where you want to be as well. But on to the big race on the card on Sunday. It is, of course, the 1,000 guineas. And here we have Fallen Angel is the 7-2 favourite ahead of Ilang Ilang at 4-1. Dance Sequence 5-1. Seed of Fire 9-1. Ramatoi is 10-1. Pretty Crystal 14-1. Porta Fortuna and Cinderella's Dream both 20-1. 25-1 bar those. And as we said earlier in the show, Andy, it's hard to make a huge case for the 2,000 guineas being a great betting heat. This looks a lot more open.
It is every year, George. I really do think you have to have a little bit more imagination and think outside the box when it comes to the 1,000 guineas, because there's been some real head scratchers over the years. I think, was it Homecoming Queen who won this race for Aidan O'Brien several years ago? I mean, she looked no more than a glorified handicap as a 2-year-old, and yet she managed to win. There's been like 25-1, 40-1 shocks at left, right, and centre. And then you get an obvious one or a race that's a little bit more predictable. There was a shock last year of sorts. Mordage obviously beat the short price favourite, and that was turned around later on in the year. Very difficult race, not knowing the full SP with a lot of these horses coming off long layoffs. I mean, Fallen Angel on her Moyglare form is very much the right favourite. She beat the right horses in inverted commas that day. She was very tough in the finish. She looked like being swamped by Vespertilio when she came sweeping on the outside to throw down a potent challenge. But once she met the rising ground at the Corio, away she went, and the further she went, the better. So I don't think a mile's going to be a problem for her. She had Liang Yilang well beaten on that occasion, who's gone on to win subsequently here later on in the year. So she holds the second favourite on form. So, like I say, if you're a bookmaker and you're looking at, well, how do I chalk these up, then she's the starting point, isn't she? Carl Burke's had a tremendous start to the season, so his horses are well forward. If she gets a good draw, then she's a massive danger to all. Looking at some of the others at bigger prices, George, there is one. If she does run, and I've got an understanding that she will run, and that's Richard Hannon's Star Style.
We exchanged a couple of messages after her debut, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I mentioned this when I did a Punchestown preview the other day with Steve Ryder. He was just asking me what I thought of the guineas, and I just chucked a couple of names at him. But the more I've looked at this race, the more I think she's got a chance. Her actual time figure first time out on her debut was right up there with some of the better ones of these, even though they've won listed and group races last season. So she's operated at a very, very high level already, and there could be more to come. Whether she's quite streetwise enough, experienced enough to tackle a race like this on only a second start, your guess is as good as mine. But the talent is very much there. So at 25-33-1, if she's that kind of price on the day, I don't mind rolling the dice on her and just taking a wild punt that she could be good enough. She's a front runner, or she's a horse that likes to race up at the speed, which is very much complemented by the track. As we know, Newmarket tends to be dominated by horses up at the speed, as it was in last year's guineas. If you're too far back, like the favourite was, you can't win. So she has got a lot of things in her favour, as well as a little bit of experience against her. So yeah, I think 25-1, 33-1 for her, if we can get that on the day, that's probably where I'd be having my fiver.
Yeah, I'd recommend anyone going back and watching her win at Newbury last time out, because, you know, you say she did a good time, but it felt like she went away on the bridle, which I always think is so impressive when you're a horse, especially on debut. And you wouldn't think that a Newbury maiden in kind of mid-April would be a muggy race either. So I was certainly very taken by that performance on debut. And as you say, it looks like a tall order to come straight into the Guineas, but maybe if, you know, if the quality is there, then the experience doesn't have to matter so much.
The other thing about that performance as well, and I often find this doing these cards when you get soft ground, as the day progresses, obviously the ground gets a little bit slow and a bit more churned up, and there's not so much spring or cushion in it. The time sometimes can taper off, and the first couple of races on the card are usually the best. And if there's a good race in the middle, then that will probably stand out. But this was the last race on an 8-race card, and yet she was still the fastest furlong per furlong horse on that card. And it was a good card as well. Sometimes you get performances like 2-year-olds that win at Ripon and they do a big number, but they're only running alongside 70 or 80 ready handicappers on that day because there's no class there. But that newbie card was a very, very good card. So she was, you know, not only the quickest, she was the quickest in comparison to, like, you know, 100 rated horses. So she's got to be group class. And I think that the Hannons are well within their rights to chuck her into the lion's den.
Interesting. Let's hope when final decks come out tomorrow, she is still there. But you say you have an understanding that the plan is to take the chance.
I think so. Reading all the reports I've read, Pat Dobbs has jocked up to ride all week. So it's looking like they're going to give it a crack. And the Hannons are sporting people, aren't they? They've got nothing to lose, really. And the owners are the same. Look, if you've got a filly that's good enough, then why not? There's only one guinea. So let's have a crack. Let's crack on.
Lovely stuff. Right, 3 more races on the cards. We've got a maiden where most of the entries haven't. Well, plenty of them will be making their first run in the 4:15, and the same with the 4:50, and then a handicap in the last. So any horses that have done big numbers that are entered in, Andy, or anything to look at in the final race?
Just the final race, George. I'll give the 2-year-old races a miss for now. There was a horse that won at Lingfield the day that really impressed me called Sinoshore. He'd gone into the race with the best credentials granted, but I just love the way he operated that day. Once he got into top gear in the home straight at Lingfield, he absolutely charged his way to the line. I remember doing his last, or looking at the closing sectionals that he did, and he was the quickest on the card over a mile. And I think this track will really suit him because it complements horses that, you know, like to gallop and like the wide expanses of galloping tracks. And I'd very much slot him into that category. And I think sort of like if the ground dried out and we got a reasonably decent weekend and there wasn't any sort of ease underfoot, then he's going to be seen to maximum effect. So I suggest you keep on the right side of Andrew Baldwin's Sinoshore. I think he's quite a decent handicapper in the making. I see him as a Royal Ascot horse of some description further down the line. So I'd be expecting him to win, or certainly going very close to winning anyway on Sunday.
Yeah, Sinoshore. Kevin Stott already booked, so suggests that he'll be taking up this entry in the final race in the handicap over a mile and 2 furlongs on Sunday at Newmarket. Thank you very much, Andy, for taking the time out of your trip to Ireland to take us through your early thoughts, I should say, on Guineas weekend at Newmarket. Hope you have a safe trip back and you're in amongst the winners again over in Ireland and this side of the Irish Sea, of course, as well. Thank you very much for taking the time to watch or listen to this. Make sure you do download the Odds Checker app where you can find the best prices, bookie offers, free bets, place terms, and Andy's tips straight to the app every morning of racing, amongst others. Two up the star style and 1,000 guineas, and that would be nice to land a 33-1 winner there. But in the meantime, enjoy the weekend's racing and please do ensure that you gamble responsibly.